Pro teams have millions to spend, and they don't always spend them wisely. But when it comes to a great shave, you don't have to shell out tons of cash. Harry's saw customers getting ripped off by the shaving industry, with overpriced, underperforming products, and decided to do something better. They found their own way to make beautifully designed razors for a fraction of the price of the other big brands, so you never wonder if you overpaid. Harry's shaving products look great, and the weighted handle makes shaving feel great too. I like to keep my beard neat, and Harry's always leaves me with a smooth yet crisp shave. Harry's quality is top-notch, thanks to German-engineered blades made in their own factory that stay sharp longer. You can get a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, foaming shave gel, and a travel cover for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. And Harry's has the highest customer satisfaction in the shaving industry, plus a convenient subscription option that you can cancel at any time. Getting the best doesn't mean spending the most when you shave with Harry's. Get started with a $13 trial set for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. That's harrys.com/bluewire for a $3 trial set.
Good luck with the most beautiful game. Do us proud.
Red alert! They're up and running again. So sweet, splendid, succinct, just glorious execution.
Guys, all I'm looking for is 60% effort, 4,000% of the time.
How sharp was that? Sharp of mind and body.
And that's why you see those beautiful tears.
Look at his movements. The most dangerous man on the planet. Nobody picks him up.
Wide-eyed, thrilled, bemused. How on earth did that happen?
Hello and welcome back to Wonder Goal, the soccer betting podcast from the Action Network. I'm Anthony DeBundo, joined as always by BJ Cunningham. Champions League round of 16 comes to a close. Just as an aside, we are recording this prior to the weekend matches, so we don't know the status of Liverpool and Man City and Arsenal and Brentford. With some obligations, we figured we'd get this out of the way early. But we do have four really interesting Champions League matches, four that are still pretty competitive at this point, all of them within one goal of one another. So after this week in the Champions League was pretty dull, you know, you had Man City kind of roll. We saw Bayern not really have to sweat their comeback very much after they scored twice in the first half. You know, it was kind of lacking drama. Well, this week, there's going to be plenty of drama, I think, and we've got four great matches to talk about, and a lot of the similar bets that we made in the first round of these matches we're going to make again. Before we get into the Champions League round of 16 fixtures, as a reminder, Wonder Goal is presented by Bet365, and Bet365 doesn't do ordinary. That's why you get more boosts with them than with anyone else. Every day, they power up the odds on hundreds of bets to give you a chance to win more. They boost specific markets, your winnings, and even parlays, and they don't stop there. Keep an eye out for the biggest and best odds with the incredible Super Boost. Check out the boost and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Disclaimer, you must be 21 or older and present in Arizona, Colorado, Indiana, Louisiana, New Jersey, Ohio, Virginia, or 18 and older in Kentucky. Gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER or 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. Terms and conditions apply. BJ, we have to start with your boys. By the time you're listening to this pod, they could be top of the table. That's if true. Things go their way this weekend. But either way, they need to rescue this tie for our tickets.
They do.
And they're in a very similar spot to what Bayern just was. And the betting odds kind of had it similar, where the market expected them to lay about 1.5, 1.75 in that second leg. Bayern had really no trouble. They put up over 3xG. Lazio was under a half. It was pretty much a comfortable 3-0 win that was never truly in doubt. Porto, to me, and I said this before, I was debating with somebody, like, who's more likely to fall, Arsenal or Bayern? And I actually said, look, Bayern is more likely to lose, but Bayern's also much more likely to make it look easy. And I think that's a similar situation that we're dealing with now, where I think Arsenal ultimately will get through here. They're, you know, they're still minus 300 to do so, and so the betting market likes them. But Porto has a way of playing and defending pretty deep, and, you know, doing the dark arts to turn this into a bit of a struggle for Arsenal if they're not able to score early. And I think the biggest thing we've seen with Arsenal maybe in the last few months, in the last month or so especially, is they have been getting more early goals in games, and teams have had to come out to play them a little more. And that's helped Arsenal look more like early season Arsenal of last year and not early season Arsenal of this year, when they were not creating those consistent open play chances and breaking teams down at the same rate that they have of late, where we've seen the offense take a step forward. We've seen Saka's production go up. So you're the Arsenal guy.
Mm-hmm.
What's the temperature check on the Gunners right now? And how do we feel about their chances of turning this?
You know, I feel pretty good about their chances getting through here. And the first meeting, you know, I don't want to say it was an anomaly, but it was also the worst match that Arsenal has played this season by far. You know, 0.09 XG from open play. But we have to remember the ball was only in play for 51 minutes. You know, Porto obviously just kept fouling. Anytime Arsenal, you know, I went back and watched the match. Anytime Arsenal had a break or like a chance to open them up, they just fouled them. They took the yellow cards. They just said, whatever, stopped anything that Arsenal could do and said, you know what? Our only chance is really to just sit in this low block. We can't let them beat us in transition. So, and they did it successfully. Credit to them. And then when they were in their low defensive block, they were really good at denying passing lanes. So, you know, credit to Porto. But having that exact same game plan, transitioning it now to London, where Arsenal is going to have Gabby Jesus available. Last match, they played Leandro Trossard up top. And what we know about what they do with Leandro Trossard is they like to drop him and Odegaard very deep in build-up, play Martinelli and Saka more inverted and more of like a 4-2-2-2. Whereas now with Gabby Jesus, you know, it's going to be more of a traditional 4-3-3, in my opinion. But one other thing that Porto did, and it's, you know, you have to pick your battles, right? Like, they said, okay, we can either, you know, try to defend from open play, you know, sit in this low defensive block. But the game plan was just like, all right, let's get Arsenal into situations where it's just dead ball situations. And we think we're physical enough on set pieces to disrupt them. And it was funny because every single time that Arsenal got a corner or a set piece, it was just like a wrestling match inside the box. And they just, you know, they threw crosses in there and Saliba had one good opportunity. And, you know, outside of that, there really wasn't much that Arsenal got. But playing that style and giving the best set piece team in the Premier League constant opportunities is a very dangerous game to play. You know, Trossard had a back post shot that really could have gone in off of a set piece. So Arsenal's going to have their chances off set pieces from open play. How many times have we gone through this Champions League, Anthony, where the underdog does really good in the first leg, they're really good in the low defensive block at home, and we say, man, they can repeat that in the second leg. And I've fallen in the trap with Lazio. I've fallen in the trap with Leipzig. I've fallen in the trap with Salzburg. And now we're in the exact same situation where we have an elite offense in Arsenal that is just continually putting up so many goals against everybody but this one match against Porto. So for me, I think Arsenal's going to turn the tide here, but I really do like the under in this match because I, you know, we had talked off air. I don't really see a scenario how this gets to four. Like, I don't really see how Arsenal opens this match up and like wins it 4-0. If anything, I think Arsenal probably wins this 2-0, even maybe 3-0. But, you know, Porto, the two opportunities that they got, you know, one, the one huge chance that they did that put them over one expected goal, Saliba just fell asleep and they, you know, hit the post and hit the guy and went back, you know, off. And then, you know, they obviously hit a screamer from outside the box. So credit to them. But I think it's going to be very hard for Porto to repeat what they did in the first leg. But it also sets up for a very slow, grinded out style of match rather than very up and down. So I think the total is really still high here at 3. So I like under 3 at -120.
Yeah, I agree. Bet the under in the first leg, feel good about the under in the second leg as well. I think the biggest stat and takeaway and thing that does scare me a little bit, Arsenal had 29 passes into the final third in their match against Porto in the first leg. They did not complete a single pass into the penalty area.
Yeah.
In the match. That is crazy for Arsenal, a team who is second at putting passes into the penalty area in the Prem this year. And who has been, we talked about it, like they get the ball there and then they weren't very efficient at turning the ball into good shots. And they've improved that in the last month or two. But final third touches, Arsenal had 119 in the attacking third. Martinelli, 25. Saka, 25. Havertz, 20. Odegaard, 15. They had a total of 12 in the penalty area. So you're kind of seeing, you know, the potential for Porto to try to replicate that. I do agree it's going to be much harder. I think the two biggest things are the ref, really. Like,
yeah, exactly.
At Porto, the ref called it tight. And Porto played to that officiating and got a lot of calls. Both ways. There were a lot of fouls, period. I don't think it was a poorly officiated game, but it was a game that was officiated in a way that would have made it better for Porto. And that's where home field advantage really matters, because they might not get that whistle. They might, you know, play more to the Premier League style, the more physical style where you're able to get away with more. And that would give Arsenal advantage, because so many times in that match, Porto would win the ball. And then when Arsenal would look to counter press, they would, you know, press them, make a 50-50 challenge, and then a foul was called. And now, you know, Porto can reset the ball, take 30 seconds off the clock, and kill the game and kill any flow and momentum that the game had. So I think it enabled Porto to shorten it. Now, Porto is still going to try the same thing. That doesn't change. And they are a good set-piece defense. That helps them too. So I think when you think about a team who really is drawing kind of dead offensively here, I think Porto's pretty close to drawing dead offensively at the Emirates, who isn't going to come out of their shell until they're down two goals, which could come early, and then we're in big trouble for our under anyway, though. And if it comes later, then it's probably going to be Arsenal playing their classic Arteta conservative possession, try to shut the game down late. We're not going to see Arsenal pushing for more numbers late, even like Bayern was at the end. So I think ultimately, I agree with the under three. I looked at it, both teams to score no as well, but that was up at minus 145. So I like three more. If Arsenal goes and puts four on me, I'll tip my cap. I think it's not a terrible idea to sprinkle. If you like under three, maybe also take under 1.25 first half, just because there is a good chance that once it gets to 2-0, the game does change. Porto takes more risk. They are more open in the transition, and et cetera, et cetera. Whereas if Arsenal is sluggish early, you're going to have that in the bank and then be very ahead on your three. Because I think, you know, there's a world where it's like 1-0 half, Arsenal gets one coming out of half, and then all of a sudden things get crazy. But either way, I like the under here. I agree. Like I said, I'm betting a lot of the same things I bet in the first leg of these matches. We're getting an extra half goal, essentially. And I think Porto's attack is going to be much worse in this game. So I think that more than accounts for the fact that you're probably looking at best Arsenal wins this by three. So give me the under. We're going to agree there. We're going to agree a lot on this show. Next game, probably the most disappointing of the four in terms of excitement in the match that I was expecting. I thought PSV Dortmund was going to be a lot better, and it was not a very good watch. The match was quite stale. So many times in the match, PSV had a chance to break in transition. They played an out ball to Irving Lozano, Choky Lozano, and the attack went to go die. And he was so bad in the game. And I think that was their biggest problem, really. And it was, in fact, you know, later in the game, the last 15-ish minutes when he came off, that they played better. And I, you know, I don't want to single him out necessarily, but I thought he was quite poor in the game. And I thought that was really a killer for them. He had 5 miscontrols and he was dispossessed 3 times. He did have a couple carries in the penalty area, but when you have 5 miscontrols and 3 times people dispossess you, that's not a great look overall in a game where you are the primary outlet who's supposed to get the ball into the penalty area. And he had a total of 4 penalty touches in the area. So yeah, not a great game for him. And I don't think much is going to change in the second matchup. If you go down the line and just like pull up all of the stats, Dortmund took an early lead. It was kind of a fluky, how did he score that situation? And then otherwise it was like pretty dead even. And I don't think the second leg's necessarily going to be all that different.
Yeah, I agree. You know, Dortmund, when they got the early goal, they kind of just started sitting off quite a bit. And it's what we've seen from Dortmund is that they're, especially in these Champions League matches where they've recognized they're not that good out of possession. So they can't press high. They can't try to disrupt build-up play. So they've sat very, you know, passive, and that's what they tried to do against PSV. But what kept happening is PSV, like you said, kept getting the ball out wide and getting in 3v2 situations. And they would get into these chances where they'd almost complete a cross, and then they just couldn't do it. So for the match, I mean, PSV had a field tilt of about 67%. So they were basically living inside of Dortmund's final third. And I'm not really sure what changes here, unless Dortmund feels the onus that like they need to have the ball and they need to build up. And if they do that, that's going to play right into PSV's hands because they are an elite pressing team, an elite team in transition. Also, Dortmund is going to be without Schlotterbach, who's suspended for the second leg. So that's obviously key because he's their best center back. And what also kept happening is because of the positioning of Lozano, Dest, and now all these guys out wide, is the center backs just kept getting pulled apart. And it was creating a lot of lanes for De Jong through the middle. And if they continue and able to do that, then they're going to have a lot of success. They just need to be able to complete that last cross. There were so many almost chances for PSV that don't show up in expected goals. If they can just get a chance on the end of those, they'll be much better. But we've said this about Dortmund forever. They're a terrible team out of possession. They've lowered their expected goals allowed per match in Germany. That's wonderful. But they haven't played anybody good for this for like, what, a two-month stretch now? Freiburg is the only team in the top half of the table that they've played since they played Leipzig around Christmas time. So, and I mentioned this on the last podcast, but in the four matches against Bayern, Leverkusen, Stuttgart, and Leipzig, they conceded a total of 12.3 expected goals. Like, when they have to step up a competition, they tend to struggle. And I understand in the first leg that it bears out that they allowed under one non-penalty expected goal, and that's wonderful. But again, PSV lived in their final third, and they had so many almost chances that they just couldn't get on the end of, that just don't show up in expected goals. So I like PSV plus a half here at minus 122. It's currently at bet365, which I think is a fantastic price. Projected Dortmund at plus 140 for the second leg, especially without Schlotterbeck. It looks like Cabal will be back in goal for Dortmund, which is a big help for them because Meyer is a terrible backup. But man, at some point in this match, somebody's got to go for it. Or maybe they'll just play it out in the 0-0 draw.
They don't have to early.
Nobody has to early, but at some point,
it all favors PSV. Yeah. I think to keep tight.
If Dortmund is playing from behind, this match changes considerably, and PSV will be a live team to really pile on the goals here.
Yeah, I think the most instructive thing to me is just, you know, pass completion rate can be game state dependent a little bit, but you kind of mentioned it, right? Dortmund averages 83% completion rate in the Bundesliga, and that's a league with a lot of pressing. They're one of the most accurate possession teams in the you know, passing the ball around, keeping the ball in build up. They completed just 74% of their passes in the first leg at PSV, which is really bad given, you know, they'd be used to teams that are going to press them. They play in Germany. They play a very German-esque team in PSV here. And on the other side of it, yes, they don't press as much, but they're still allowing the second lowest pass completion rate in the league. So they're still a team that wants to make it frenetic and team that wants to jump passes and cut stuff off and take chances out of possession to cut off your buildup. And PSV was able to complete north of 80%. So it was PSV's system that won out ultimately. And that's what you mentioned with the field tilt. Like, even before the goal, PSV didn't take a ton of the shots, but, you know, Dortmund was getting a lot of like low quality, not even call them half chances. Until Malen had that great moment, and Malen was really the entire attack in the match for Dortmund. He took five shots and was pretty much their whole team in that game. And then the penalty was soft for sure. I didn't really think it was, but either way, it's a goal that had been coming given just the control that PSV had put on Dortmund, the pressure they put them under. So I like PSV plus a half. There's a minus 130 out there. I think you got even better, minus 125.
Yep, at 365.
I really think that I have PSV a dog by about a quarter goal. I had them favored by about a little over a quarter at home. I did downgrade them a touch, and now I have them about a quarter goal worse. So you give me a half, I'm going to take it. Pretty much where I'm at on this.
Yep, me too. I mean, I have Dortmund at plus 140, so definitely some value here on PSV.
Pro teams have millions to spend, and they don't always spend them wisely. But when it comes to a great shave, you don't have to shell out tons of cash. Harry's saw customers getting ripped off by the shaving industry with overpriced, underperforming products and decided to do something better. They found their own way to make beautifully designed razors for a fraction of the price of the other big brands, so you never wonder if you overpaid. Harry's shaving products look great, and the weighted handle makes shaving feel great too. I like to keep my beard neat, and Harry's always leaves me with a smooth yet crisp shave. Harry's quality is top-notch, thanks to German-engineered blades made in their own factory that stay sharp longer. You can get a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, foaming shave gel, and a travel cover for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. And Harry's has the highest customer satisfaction in the shaving industry, plus a convenient subscription option that you can cancel at any time. Getting the best doesn't mean spending the most when you shave with Harry's. Get started with a $13 trial set for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. That's harrys.com/bluewire for a $3 trial set.
Inter and Atletico Madrid, where it's kind of Groundhog Day again from 3 weeks ago, where when we talked about it on the pod, Inter was plus 105, 110 opener. They closed and ran all the way out to minus 160 on the three-way money line and then completely destroyed Atletico in the first leg. It was probably the most surprisingly uncompetitive matchup of the first round, and given like what we went thinking going in and what it ended up actually being. Because Inter, we talked about their versatility. We talked about their ability to play and beat different styles. That was on full display because Atleti came out and went full Diego Simeone terrorism ball, and they created almost nothing until after they were down a goal. They held on for their lives and almost got there. They almost stole the result. But ultimately, Inter gets their goal. They create over 2.5 XG. They win the match, get the lead, and now they look to protect it. And now we're seeing the market again take Inter money. So they opened right around minus 115 on the draw no bet. I threw it in the app. I like them again. They're out to minus 130 now. I still like them, but we're getting to the point where I would stop playing them. I really think that Inter's ability to play on the break here as Atletico eventually has to start taking more chances is what turns this match. The first match, 26 penalty area touches for Inter Milan, 13 for Atleti. Doubled up possession, dominated the midfield exchanges. Like, it was an uncompetitive match, really.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, what's interesting about that first match is you would have thought that Atletico would come out and they would just play low defensive block and they'd say, here, Inter, have the ball. We're just going to sit deep and we're just going to try to absorb it and everything. And they did for stretches. But if you look at how Inter created all of their huge chances, it was in transition moments when they turned them over from the mid block. And what happened towards the second half when they really started pumping up the pressure, Thuram got hurt at halftime. So they bring Arnautovic, and he missed two huge chances that could have put them up and then finally converted the last one to put them up 1-0. Thuram is healthy now. He's going to play in this match. He came off the bench against Genoa on Monday. You know, we're obviously recording this before their match against Bologna this weekend, so we'll see if he plays there. But another thing that was really alarming is, you know, historically what Diego Simeone does with his defensive block is he says, which what a lot of defensive blocks do, is we're cutting off the central parts of the pitch. You can have the ball in wide areas, and we're just going to defend your crosses. Like, we think we're good enough to defend those. They did a horrible job defending crosses in the first leg. You know, I know it doesn't sound like a lot, but Inter completed 5 crosses into Atletico's penalty area. For context, elite crossing teams will average about completing about 2 crosses in their penalty area. So Atletico basically doubled what elite teams, or excuse me, Inter basically doubled what elite teams actually do. So Atletico let them have the ball in wide areas, and they just kept pumping in those crosses, and a couple of them came in transition as well. So this match sets up perfectly because, like you said, Inter is a very versatile team tactically, but really where they are at their best is in a position like this where they are playing with a lead, they don't need to have the ball, and they can just burn you time and time and time again in transition. And that is exactly what they are going to do here in Madrid. So I agree with you. I played Inter Toronto bet minus 130 today on Thursday. We'll see where this line goes. I understand that they're up a goal, but they are not the type of team like Atletico, if they were up a goal, to just try and kill this match off and not even try to attack. No, Thuram and Lautaro Martinez are really going to be dangerous on the break here. So, yeah, I love Inter here. They should dominate this leg just like they did the first one.
Yeah, it's kind of similar to what happened. Inter took a lead in both of their first legs last year. They beat Porto at home, and then they kind of held on for dear life in the second leg. Like, Onana was big for them in goal. But the second match, I think, is more intuitive. And it's, you know, they took the lead, and then the second leg ended up being this like chaotic back and forth match with Benfica. Now, Benfica and Atletico Madrid are very different tactically, but you saw in that match how good Inter can be and on the break with a lead already. And they kind of did it to Milan in the second leg of the, like, they were able to get leads and then play with leads this entire second leg in all of their matches. And we saw just how effective they can be in that role. So they have experience in that role too, which I think helps, you know, given that they've just done this run just last year. Very chalky opening stage so far. All four of the favorites got through, all of them pretty comfortably except for Real Madrid, which was a little dicier at the end. It does create an interesting situation on the odds board where still Arsenal and Inter Milan are priced behind Real Madrid and Bayern. And look, I know that neither have won technically in advanced in their group, but both are over minus 300 to do so. I still think there's time to hop on the bandwagon for Arsenal and Inter. And then Friday is going to be the draw where, again, we have six, you know, I will say five teams who I think are clear of the rest, whether it's City, Real Madrid, Bayern, Arsenal, Inter. Assuming all five go through, those are your five favorites. There's going to be four matchups, which means one of them is going to, at least one of them, maybe two, are going to get drawn against one another. And that's where, you know, this tournament's going to really start to turn. Notice I didn't mention Barca in those teams because I really don't think they are. And now with this injury situation with Pedri and De Jong, they're in a weird spot. Napoli took some money off of that injury news. Barca opened around minus 145 in the second leg against Napoli. They got bet down to about minus 120 now, which is where it is. Napoli was so bad in the first leg for the majority of it, but that's Victor Osimhen, right? Like, he bullies a defender, makes a nice turn, boots it in, and that's Lewandowski. Same thing. Like, Barca was clearly better than Napoli in the midfield exchanges, like controlled the flow of the game, but it was an individual moment from Lewandowski that turned it, an individual moment from Osimhen that turned it back. Kind of got us to a stalemate. This is the one match where I really, you know, I had the over in the first leg, was on the wrong side, didn't deserve to go over. But I don't really have a strong read on the second one because I think Barca is a little cheap at home here, only minus 120. But their injury situation in the midfield now has them very vulnerable. Like, you know, Gundogan probably starts. Oriol Romeu, like, it's a weird situation that Barca is dealing with in their midfield with no Pedri, no Gavi, potentially no De Jong. So where do you come down on this one?
I don't know. I threw my hands up for the first meeting and I was just like, I don't really know how this one's going to play out. And after watching the first meeting, I feel like I didn't really learn much, quite frankly. And like you said, a couple of good individual moments. Napoli didn't take a shot for the entire first half, which is kind of concerning. But yeah, without Pedri and without De Jong, well, then you're losing control in the midfield. And that's ultimately what Xavi wants. You know, De Jong is so good at reading the temperament of a match and being able to play to the style and speed that Barcelona really wants to play to without him being the conductor in there. Like you said, Gundogan is not really the deep lying. I'm going to go to the back line and, you know, help build out. Pedri could be that guy as well. So it's just a very, very odd situation. You know, I have Barcelona projected at minus 123 and the total at 2.87. So I'm like right in line with where the market is right now. And, you know, Napoli did beat Juventus over the weekend. In the midweek, they beat Sassuolo. So they're starting to get some of the positive aggression that they were getting back, that they're due for at least in Serie A. But yeah, I'm at a loss for words and I'm at a loss for of what's actually going to happen in this match. So I think this is the easiest match to just pass on the board. And I don't think either of these teams have a shot. If they play, like you said, one of the top four or five in the next round, especially if, you know, if Barcelona gets paired against a Arsenal, City, or Inter, they are completely toast. Against the other teams, they might have somewhat of a shot.
I think they're done against Barca, against Bayern, too.
Yeah.
We've seen Bayern bully them, the same Bayern team bully that same Barca team so many times now.
Yeah.
Real Madrid, well, like... Real Madrid, the way they play, like, they just let you have a chance, no matter who you are. Like, you're going to have a go at it.
It's not that good.
And you're probably going to lose because that's what they do. They just, like, they beat you in the moments. But, like, you're going to get your day. Like, you're not going to get played off the park in a way where you're, like, suffocated. It's like an old story that, like, I think it was Nick Kyrgios was talking about playing, like, Roger Federer versus playing Novak Djokovic. And it's like, he would always much rather play Djokovic because Roger, because Roger's going to let you get your shots and then he's just going to hit amazing shots where you're just like, oh, I have no chance. Fine. But when you play Novak, it's like you're getting strangled to death the whole match and it's not really a fun experience. That's kind of the difference between City and Real. And so I think Barca could give Real a game. Although this current version, like their transition defense is being a total sieve going up against Real Madrid, like could be ugly.
Yeah, well, the funny thing, and I mentioned this about Real Madrid before, but they are one of the most unique teams in Europe in the fact that they don't really have like a clear, like defined tactical plan. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing in a sense because, you know, they're of kind of the old school nature of, you know, in the past, like a lot of these old school teams, even like Sir Alex Ferguson's Manchester United, like didn't have these like Pep Guardiola type tactics. It was kind of just like, we have better players than you. So this is kind of the general plan we're going to go with. And then that's kind of it. So, and that's kind of what Real Madrid does, quite frankly. And they're obviously really good in transition. But what's really clear, and we haven't really seen Real Madrid tested in this aspect, they did a little bit against Leipzig, but when they are forced to actually press you and try to disrupt you and cause problems, they are so, so bad at doing that. So if they have to play one of these teams and they fall behind, they are in massive trouble. So
famous last words.
Yeah, famous last words. They're going to lead in every single match. They're going to just be able to play in transition and Vinicius and Bellingham.
Or they'll just get their comebacks whenever they... I mean, they've done it before. 2 years ago was the famous comebacks.
Yeah.
Against PSG and Real.
Yep. We'll see. PSG is another interesting team that we'll get to in the next rounds. But yeah, I'm actually way more... I'm really excited for the next draw. I hope we get some good matches.
Oh, yeah. Well, we get the full draw, right? We'll get the Europa League too, and we'll get the semifinals. So we'll have the bracket. Final eight. And yeah, it kind of just feels like to me that the Barca-Napoli winner and the PSV Dortmund winner are the clear, like, these are the two teams we hope to play. So they'll probably get drawn against each other. That would be the two. And PSG, you know, just because they have Mbappe, it's kind of scary.
They're always scary.
And Dembele healthy. Like, if Mbappe and Dembele are healthy, like, nobody actually wants to play them. No. Even though they're not that good. So I could easily see PSG to pick off a Bayern, even an Inter, in a two legs. So let's move on to Europa League. Fun day today. A lot of overs. And I know me and you both bet a lot of overs, and a lot of them hit. And we got one bet immediately that kind of jumped off the board to me. I'll start with Liverpool, Sparta, Prague. Both teams to score, yes, at -102. Klopp rotated through a bunch of different teams, and it was very evident that the rotated version of Liverpool is much closer to early vintage era Klopp, when they were just, we're just going to outscore you because we have better players and we're not going to actually defend. Because Prague could have had two or three, and they really should have in that match. And they're coming into this down 5-1 on aggregate. Liverpool is going to be coming off this City match with a 4-goal lead at home. They're not going to actually go for it. They're going to probably rotate everybody again. They'll still get their goals, but they're also probably going to concede one. It'll be like a 2-1, 3-1, 2-2, 3-2 kind of game, I think. And Liverpool cruises to the quarterfinal, but they're going to concede along the way. So both teams to score, yes, at -102. Crazy number to me. I know it's like Prague's on the road, but we just saw this Sparta-Prague team go toe-to-toe with Galatasaray, a team who is just a better, like a poor man's Liverpool in the way they're set up to play. They do it with much worse midfielders and defenders. And Prague went back and forth with them, and they went back and forth with Liverpool today in a matchup that really should have plenty of goals again. So both teams to score, yes, -102. Jumped off the board immediately at me for the second leg there.
Yeah, I like another. I'll stick with Prague. Slavia Prague, +0.5 against AC Milan. They're obviously down 4-2 on aggregate. Unfortunately, they were playing pretty well against AC Milan at the San Siro, and then they got a red card and everything kind of fell apart. But, you know, if you take that first minutes, those first, you know, 20 or so minutes, they were living inside of AC Milan's final third. You know, the momentum chart was actually in their favor up until that red card. And they're a really, really good team. They're a team that pummeled Roma during the group stage. Now they're going to be down 2 goals in aggregate. We've just saw this with AC Milan. They pumped Rennes in the knockout round, beat them 3-0. And then we saw this return leg where it just became this incredibly chaotic back and forth of type match. So you could see some, I wouldn't expect it, but there might be some squad rotation coming in here. You know, in that second leg against Rennes, they conceded 3 expected goals. So it's a very different type of AC Milan team that, you know, as we've said, has been frauds for a long time, but just a different mentality when you're, you know, up 2 goals. They're probably going to play very, very passively and not really try as hard to beat them on the break. So, I mean, AC Milan sitting at -120 right now. I think that's a crazy price. So I love Prague +0.5 at even money.
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, last week I thought to myself, okay, we've seen this Milan team do this before where they get the lead and they just sit on it. Their complete inability to slow down Rennes when playing with the lead in the first matchup when they had a 3-goal aggregate lead gives me pause as to like whether they can do that against Slavia Prague, because I agree. I think they're going to be flawed. I'm holding a Prague to advance ticket that is in some deep shit. So I don't know if I want to add more, but you know, it was like +260 and I was feeling pretty good. Like you said, like they were right there. They had a great chance right before the red card, give away the red, and then just stopped defending for 20 minutes. They were down 3-1, fought back into it at 3-2. I was like, oh, they got a shot. And then 4-2. They're probably drawing dead here. But again, it's a Prague team that had great numbers in the Europa League group stage, Slavia Prague. And the Milan defense, that's been the biggest thing. With Loftus-Cheek and Reinders in there, like their attack, Milan's attack has taken a clear step forward this year, year over year. But their defense is way worse, and they are not able to stop the outlet passes. And that's where Slavia Prague, rather, had all of their success today. So I think they're going to do that again, and I think you're right. They're live for sure. We've got our little head-to-head battle, Atalanta and Sporting.
Yeah, no.
Pretty much in line with the market.
Sporting is
I don't think they're drawing dead. They rested a lot of guys on Wednesday.
They sat Jokeris for the first mm-hmm. half, which I was very concerned with. Like, why are you sitting your best player?
They weren't much better with him on the pitch. But yeah, Atalanta was the clear better side. Also, Atalanta didn't start to Catalare. Like, it was weird from both teams. I think that both teams were kind of just playing it out cagedy. That's one where you need to wait for lineups. If the Catalare and Jokeris are both in there, I think 2.5, over 2.5, -120 is like a little cheap. But the first leg was pretty dead. It was only 1.3 XG. There were 4 posts, but there was like not actual good chances. It was just a lot of like crazy shots that hit the post. But yeah, keep tabs on the lineups there, because if both teams play their best attackers, like it should be over 2.5 in a second leg. But Atalanta's got a bit of an edge there. Roma destroyed Brighton. I think Brighton's pretty dead. Marseille is pretty much through. So we're going to have a fun stage, like Liverpool, Leverkusen, Roma, Milan, Marseille, Atalanta. So it's going to be a really fun Europa League quarterfinal potential here. There's not a ton of close matchups. West Ham and Freiburg. That's like the
Rangers,
most interesting.
Benfica.
Yeah, Benfica going to Rangers should be a fun one, but nothing else for me. And as of yet, we got some time to go through those. As always, follow us in the app. We'll have some picks. Follow us in the Discord. We'll get to that. BJ's betting the Bournemouth Luton over in the league.
Yep.
If you listen to any pod we've done in the last month, then you know why he's betting the over. The market just continues to.
If you don't, you can read on the actionnetwork.com and in the Action Network app, I will have a full preview. So if you're somebody who enjoys reading rather than listening to my annoying voice, you can do that.
Absolutely. All right, that'll do it for this brief episode of Wonder Goal. We will be back on Thursday morning to preview the final weekend slate before the international break, and we will have actual reaction to, you know, the decider, maybe the biggest match of the season, Liverpool City. We'll have full reaction to that coming up on Thursday's episode, which we didn't have the chance to record after. So thanks to everybody for listening. Thanks to Bet365. Thanks to Noah, our producer. Lieboff will be back next week. And everybody enjoy the Champions League.
Action Network reminds you, please gamble responsibly. If you or someone you care about has a gambling problem, help is available 24/7 at 1-800-GAMBLER.